This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. If you designate your Thrivent Choice dollars to Issues Etc. online before October 31st, Thrivent will designate an additional $25 to Issues Etc. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio and give an additional $25 to LPR, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page at issuesetc.org.
The headlines are stacking up almost daily. We have killings in Kenya. We have killings in Pakistan. In the background looms Syria and the Christian plight there. And then in the background still is Egypt and the Christian plight there. It's a picture, each of these individual things, we don't want to lump them all together, but it's a picture that begins to emerge of Christian persecution. So why are the media finding it so difficult to process the religion angle on Christian persecution? And why, apparently, are some Christians in the West less than disturbed by this Christian persecution elsewhere? Joining us to talk about media coverage of persecution of Christians in Pakistan, Kenya, Syria, and Egypt, Terry Mattingly. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
We got Kenya. We have Pakistan. We have the longer-lived stories of Syria. And Egypt is probably the granddaddy of them all at this point in terms of catching the headlines. Is there a common religion angle to them all?
Well, I mean, there are several. And then we also have there's so many issues related to this, I almost don't know where to start. There's no question that we're watching persecution. There's no question that the media is having trouble facing the thread of persecution running through all these stories. And then on top of that, there's the problem that it seems the American church doesn't seem to be all this concerned about the persecution of their sisters and brothers on the other side of the planet. There's just layer on layer on layer. And in the last month, we have just seen an explosion of stuff, especially if you go out, like, say, 6 weeks to that astonishing wave of terror in Egypt with 100 different Christian sites hit, and including the complete destruction and burning of 42 churches. Then you move on to Syria, you know, with Christian site after Christian site being attacked, bishops being kidnapped, you know, priests being beheaded, an ancient Christian village, one of the only places left in the world where they speak biblical Aramaic, is taken over by a branch of Al-Qaeda, and included in that town, I still haven't heard the status of this, is the oldest church in Christendom, the single oldest sanctuary being used by the church today. We don't know the status of that place. Then you move on to, you know, the acts of terror in Kenya and the very specific targeting of Christians. Then you move on to the biggest act of anti-Christian terrorism in Pakistan in centuries, perhaps ever. I feel overwhelmed, and we're getting some headlines on this, but I'm not sure we're getting a connect-the-dots story out of this, some look at what's actually happening.
Why is that? You said a minute ago that the media is having a kind of processing these stories in terms of the religion angle. Why are the media having that hard time?
Now, people have been debating this subject for years. Part of it is that they have trouble thinking of Christians as victims. And the fact that they take some of the culture war elements of debates in the United States and they transfer that over to Christians in other parts of the world. Some people have put it this way. The Christians overseas who are suffering and dying, they have the wrong allies for much of the press. I think the press also has a tendency to assume that this is a conservative story. I mean, even though you have all kinds of Christians being killed in a wide variety of circumstances, the third level is they think of it kind of as special pleading for Christians to protest the killing and persecution of other Christians, when in reality, of course, this is all a part of a bigger image, a bigger picture, which is the persecution of religious minorities. And it's not just happening among Islam. I mean, a priest who is killed in Mexico for opposing the drug lords in a unique way is experiencing religious persecution, as is a Catholic catechist who's hacked to death by Hindu radicals in India. You have all kinds of shapes and forms of this story, even though the dominant story definitely is a branch, a form of Islam that is attacking both Christians and, of course, minority forms of Islam as well, in the name of blasphemy laws, you know, et cetera.
So is it a double whammy in a sense? I mean, just to kind of speak of that, a double whammy against Christians if they happen to be both Christian and a religious minority in an Islamic country?
Well, yeah, you have a belt that essentially runs from Nigeria through Africa, across the Middle East, and all the way over to Indonesia. And if you look at the statistics from Pew Forum, from the U.S. State Department, et cetera, if you look at the statistics related to religious persecution, that belt on our globe is on fire. I mean, there just for 20-something years, we've had unbelievable levels of persecution and violence, all the way down to one British historian said the other day that the missing story here is we're watching the extinction of Christianity in the lands of its birth. Now, you would think Christians would care about that.
Okay, that's my next question. You mentioned also that Christians in the West are seemingly not as concerned about this persecution of their brothers and sisters elsewhere. Why is that, do you think?
Well, if you flash back to 1997, which is when concern about the persecution of Christians first began to build, the human rights scholar Paul Marshall, who is a friend of mine related to the Media Project, Paul and Lila Gilbert wrote a book called Their Blood Cries Out, which Christianity Today named the Book of the Year, etc. In that book, Paul identified a number of theological issues that tended to keep Americans from being concerned about the persecution of other Christians. The two that jumped to mind immediately from memory for me is we were right in the middle of the whole premillennial dispensational left behind fad. In other words, anything that symbolizes or signals the end of the world, a lot of Christians were quite frankly applauding. So like, hey, the church is being persecuted in the Holy Land. That means we're closer to the end of the world. That's great. So you have that. The second thing you have going on there is you have a lot of people that frankly say the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. You have some people that look only at the positive, which is if the church is getting persecuted, then that means it must be doing something right, it must be growing, and so we got to look at the bright side of this. As Paul Marshall has pointed out, it is theological sadism to look on other people's suffering and dying as your bright side. I mean, it's an extremely closed-mind attitude. The third thing that Paul identified all the way back there is coming back to me now, is you also just said, frankly, that these are the wrong kinds of churches. If the dominant strain of growing Christianity in the United States is kind of megachurch evangelicalism, it's hard for them to be concerned about the dying of Orthodox Christians, Eastern Rite Catholic Christians, Melkites, you know, and a host of other ancient forms of Christianity. These Christians don't look right. They don't sound right. Many of them are Arabs. They speak the wrong languages. They use the wrong worship services. You know, they don't use video screens at the front of their church and everybody puts their hands in the air during the key change for the worship songs. They're not the right church. And there's no question that that disconnect is a factor here. Now, moving ahead, is that the same thing that's happening today? I talked to Paul about this for my column for Scripps this week, just yesterday, and Paul said, to some degree, we're not as much in the apocalyptic fervor age as we were in 1997, but you would have to say that the thread of individualism and independence in megachurch Protestant Christianity in America has only grown. And you might also add that if apocalyptic theology has gone onto the back burner a little bit. What's gone onto the front burner is a kind of individualistic, therapeutic, feel-good theology that has arisen. And that doesn't fit very well with Christians being massacred in a mall in Nairobi either. So the American church just doesn't get what's happening to Christians in the rest of the world.
Is part of it, too, and I don't want to get off the subject of Pakistan, but or of Kenya or of Egypt or Syria, but is part of the picture here, too, is if Western Christians, well, dare we say, even if the U.S. State Department were to recognize the plight of Christians in a substantial way in all these different venues, they might also have to come to grips with the plight of Christians in Palestine.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a problem. And then that gets you back into the tensions between the Palestinians and the nation of Jordan, as well as, of course, the nation of Israel. And that story is so emotional, and it's such a huge thing for the State Department. But statistically, as important as that story is, it's not as bloody and violent as what's happening in these other nations. But that's an excellent point. That certainly complicates the overall scene.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, writes the Weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him on the persecution of Christians in Pakistan, Kenya, Syria, and Egypt.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
Yeah, Oktoberfest. Not in Munich, but in Kewanee, Illinois, at St. Paul's. Sunday, October 13th to the 15th. If you've never been, you really need to come. It's the best party on the block. And our guest this year is Pastor Todd Wilkin of Issues Etc. We have worship and music, a speaker, and then brats and beer and laughter and loads of fun. Call us at 309-852-2461. Leave your name and phone number, and we'll get back to you. Yeah, Oktoberfest.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does the theory of an old earth creation confess what the text of Scripture says about creation? I've written an article for the Fall Issues Etc. journal titled More Questions for Old Earth Creationists. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor David Ramirez details his journey from liberal Lutheranism to confessional Lutheranism. The online Issues Etc. journal.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
The choir of Wells Cathedral with the excellent hymn, Crown Him with Many Crowns. It's playing right now at LutheranPublicRadio.org. It's our 24/7 sacred music station. We call it Sacred Music for the World. It runs the entire course of the year, 24/7, and it follows the course of the church's year. It's LutheranPublicRadio.org. It's absolutely free, and if this is a good example of what you'll hear there, all the time. consistently at LutheranPublicRadio.org, Sacred Music for the World. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the persecution of Christians in Pakistan, Kenya, Syria, and Egypt. Terry, we talked before about how the media is doing so far. What do the media need to do with these now almost daily headlines? How should they treat them?
Well, first of all, they just have to learn to ask practical questions. At this point in Egypt, I don't know how you look at news in Egypt without asking the religious minority question. Yet, to my shock, the Los Angeles Times the other day covered a story about how important religion is in Egypt and what a huge part of the story there religion is. The word Coptic is never even mentioned. There's no mention of churches, no mention of burning monasteries, no mention of any of this. I was staggered when I read that story. In Nigeria, when the first reports came back that the gunman, the Al-Qaeda-linked gunman, had actually let Muslims go, I put a post up at Get Religion immediately saying, how do you know you're just letting the Muslims go? I said, I predict that details will emerge that hostages were actually asked, if they're Muslim, can they recite the actual conversion prayer of Islam? And if they refused to convert to Islam, were they then killed? This is something we have seen in Syria. We've seen in other parts of the world. Sure enough, within about 2 days, that element of the story emerged. In other words, what I'm saying is you can act like a journalist. You can keep files on these things. You can learn the patterns. You can learn what some of the familiar themes are, and then you ask people about them. And then you go to the State Department and you follow up and say, if thousands of people are being run out of Syria, would the United States ever consider taking them as religious victims who are fleeing their societies? Would we offer them asylum? Are we on the verge of an exodus from Egypt? I mean, what an ironic image that would be in a headline. Are we looking at an exodus of the Copts from Egypt? And if so, will the United States join Europe and other parts of the world in accepting these people as they flee, as their homes and their businesses and their churches are burned? That's an ongoing story. It's not just a one-day story about the slaughter of people in a mall. It's an ongoing story about something that's happening to one of the world's major religions.
So let's focus in on the two stories that have made the headlines this last week, beginning with Kenya. How do you think the media have done in getting to the real story? Of course, the facts are flowing in. You know, it's not like we can have the whole story at once, but getting to the real story and getting the religion angle covered well, in particular on the story of the Kenya atrocity?
Well, of the ones that are going on right now, I think that actually had the best coverage. And I credit to some degree some of the European media for asking some of the religion questions point blank. The first day's coverage was pretty average, but let's face it, that's a really hard story to cover. I mean, you literally have people still held hostage in there. I would have to single out one newspaper. It was either the New York Times or the Post. It doesn't spring to memory right now. One paper failed to mention the fact that the action, the initial violence, was in a cafe that was owned by people from Israel, which seems to me to be a fairly relevant detail, would you think? Within a day or two, we got additional information that made the Kenya story a bigger picture. Now, I haven't seen much evidence that they've taken a look at whether or not this particular Al-Qaeda affiliate is attacking churches and religious groups and other forms of minority Islam all throughout its region. In other words, once again, we got the snapshot. Are we going to get the large picture? In Syria, this is where I'm seeing the biggest problem right now. Where they're so caught up with the fact that this is a political civil war, when the evidence seems to be that the Syrian rebels that are from Syria are not being as violent toward Christians and others as the outside forces who've come in from other countries that are truly driving the horrific levels of violence. We're beginning to see stories on this, but it's really taking time. Pakistan, of course, you have this one terrible event, but there have been attacks on the Christian communities in Pakistan linked to the Taliban for years, and we're supposed to think this is going to get better after U.S. troops pull out of Afghanistan. And Pakistan, meanwhile, is trying to negotiate with the very groups that have killed members of the Pakistani government who were tolerant of other religions and blew up this church, blew up this historic, highly symbolic church with Anglican roots there in Pakistan. So, I could go on and on.
So each of these incidents, whether they're kind of long-running like Egypt or Syria or Kenya and Pakistan, all have a bigger story to be told. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got the picture, and then you have the larger scene in which the snapshot is framed. And we tend to view these individual acts of violence as snapshots. Oh, this terrible thing happened, moving on. And it would be irresponsible of me to blame the press for this without mentioning that the American public is singularly uninterested in events on the other side of the world. I mean, it's no competition in terms of readership interest between Miley Cyrus and Syria. I mean, there's just, and as sad as that is, as tragic as that is, that's a reality for editors.
How much does that shape how much effort they are willing to put into stories that, if we kind of set it in perspective, even tried to set it in perspective, ought to be pushing Miley Cyrus off of the headlines?
Yeah, well, you combine that reality with the advertising crisis that's cutting back the workforce in many bureaus and major newsrooms, and then you combine that with these prejudices, these framing devices that make it hard to believe that Christians could be persecuted, because after all, we all know that here in America, it's the Christians who are persecuting anybody who disagrees with them, and they're the fringe radical element. This tendency to allow foreign coverage to somehow be shaped by the kind of domestic culture war stereotypes that happen here in the United States. And frankly, there are some liberals, consistent old-school liberals, who are fiercely fighting for religious freedom around the world. But in the last decade or so, most of the concern about religious freedom in the rest of the world, quite frankly, has come from the political and cultural and doctrinal right. That has not helped this story in major newsrooms.
Would the coverage be better? You mentioned kind of the shrinking of the domestic newsroom. Would the coverage be better if we actually had bureaus or even people stationed at bureaus in these places?
I can't prophesy that. Let's put it this way. It would have the opportunity to be better. My colleague, Father George Conger at Get Religion, wrote a post in which he noted that in some way what's happened on some of these stories is the triumph of some of the stringers. Now, stringer, of course, is a journalism term for a freelance writer who specifically writes individual stories for a publication, even though they're not on their staff. Some of the best work in the European papers has actually been done by stringers, people who don't work for these bureaus but are kind of out there risking their neck just getting these stories covered on their own and then selling their coverage to individual papers. That's an amazing side of this. I was glad George called attention to it.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, we talk about the hostility that Christian Christian faces, a violent hostility the Christian faces in other lands, sometimes even here in the United States. There's a kind of nonviolent hostility that our youngest Christians, some of our youngest Christians, face. It's when we send them off to college and university. It's an intellectual hostility. It's maybe an ideological hostility, but it's hostility nonetheless. LCMSU knows what that's like and wants to prepare young Christian people to face that kind of hostility with Christian aplomb at the college and the university. LCMSU is there to help your college student. If you are a college student, there to help you. You can find out more about them at lcms.org/LCMSU. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on the Liturgy of Confirmation with Pastor Will Wheaton, and we'll review the movie Rush with Pastor Ted Giese. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.